could fit that on.
But there is a slight suggestion that next season might be better. So
Let's hope so.
No one seems to get a penalty for pulling shirts nowadays, or hardly ever.
Or Seven Simple Seasons. See what we did there?
Yes, like so. It.
Fly Me to the Moon, the audio podcast companion with Rob Nichols.
Quite right. It is the podcast companion for issue 595 versus Hull City. Rob, we have not one, not two, but three awesomely wonderful special guests, do we not?
Unbelievable.
Well, I thought, bring on the squad. You know, that's what we Bernie Slaven earlier in the season, so we have the return of Jack Cochran.
Afternoon.
We have the welcome debut of Emily Hartley.
Yep. Good
Sorry,
morning.
I paused over that because there was a moment. It was about the same time, Rob, as earlier in the season. Well, earlier in the week, you said, shock result on Tuesday, wasn't it? About the sort of same time, Emily revealed she was a Manchester United fan.
Oh, I see.
Thankfully, we've offset that. We've offset that completely by the
City fan.
Legendary. The legendary Stone, who is Richard Piers-Raymer. Oh, yes. How are you, Richard?
Hello, I'm well, thank you.
There, you see, it's all good. So Richard's with us back on Fly Me to the Moon because, frankly, we need all the help we can get. Earlier in the season when we brought Bernie Slaven in to co-host with us, we had a feeling we'd turned it round, didn't we, Rob? We really thought we'd turned the challenges round. Because of the six consecutive defeats, we thought we need to actually work through this, and then the planning went in there, and clearly both. So, Rob, share with us this edition. Right. I mean, we'll talk, obviously, with Richard about his borough material as well, so added routine
good,
from
good,
that
good.
Perspective. What's the state of play, given that we're 4 points behind Bristol City?
I think the state of play is we look at the cliche, we look at Saturday's match and we don't look any further than that, and we leave all postmortems till the end of the season, I think, which we need to do, but I think we've got to get there first, and we've got to... It's a big task ahead of us against Hull City, because Hull City are on a tremendous run. They won three in a row, and I think the other stat is that no one's picked up any more points than them since October than the top three, which is some going. Mm-hmm. And it also underlines what a terrible start to the season they had. But it's that sort of championship where teams sort of surge up, get momentum, head of steam. They go unbeaten for several games, and then it comes to a halt. And it's who is able to sort of get that streaky run together in the last few games of the season. I'm not looking at playoffs myself anymore. I'm just looking at trying to recover from this six games defeat and put in some good performances and show some character. And win some games.
Richard, does that sort of chime with your own sort of thoughts on the whole sequence?
Well, as I said earlier, and any season where you're consistently in the top half of the championship cannot be regarded as a total disaster. The great thing about the playoffs, ever since they began, is that they do keep your season alive, don't they? Even though it's an outside failure.
That's right,
I can remember when teams ran away with the second division. And you would be finishing
like Middlesbrough in 1973, 73, 74. Exactly.
A team that was, just to repeat myself, a team that was regarded pretty much, certainly in the southern press, as a boring team.
Yeah.
A boring borough, which Jack Charlton's team were called, and yet now we look upon those as golden days.
And you're right. And if you look back before Jack Charlton, we under Stan Anderson, we invariably finished fourth. And and you look at it now and think, oh, you were pretty close. But actually, because there was no playoffs. Mm. And it was two up, two down. Yep. You were actually nowhere near, were you, really?
That's right. We'd be leading the pack for a while. I remember Derby, when Brian Clough's Derby took the league. We were right up there, right up until towards Easter. We lost, I think, at Crystal Palace and Charlton at Easter. Mm. And so we fell away. But we finished that season fourth, which would be a good playoff place now.
Yeah.
Thinking of those days momentarily, I noticed that on page 31 of the current edition, Get Well Soon, Big John Hickton.
Oh, yeah. I don't know whether you were aware of that, Richard, that...
I posted my best wishes on Facebook for Big John. I used, I think, three of the images I'd done of him and wished him well, a return to good health. Hmm.
Yeah, I suppose when we were growing up as kids, when you played on the in the back garden or in a park or on the road, if you were in goal, you would probably be Gordon Banks, and if you were out of...
I was Eddie Connacan.
I was either Bob Appleby
or Eddie Connacan.
Right.
In case you're looking confused, listener, and indeed Emily looking a wee bit confused now, Big John Hickson was one of the first players that actually signed an autograph for me in Cleveland Center. It was almost as though the Messiah had actually arrived, even though I was a Man City fan at the time. But there we are, that's by the by. Not quite a Francis Lee person from my point of view, but there we are.
He was top scorer for year after year after year. And, even though he began his career at Sheffield Wednesday, we always consider him like a one team player in a way, a one club player, because he could have gone on to all sorts of heights because he was such an exciting goal scorer, wasn't he?
And he's a lovely man.
He's a lovely man.
He took the penalties and he started his run up to at the centre circle.
Yeah.
If you could tell, if you're in town, you could tell Burrow were taking a penalty, but the ground shook with the thunder of him running. I think he only ever missed one, and oddly, that was against Hull. Ian McKechnie, the Hull keeper, was the only one to save a penalty.
And I think actually, I forgot about this in the fanzine, I think his last goal, league goal, was when he was on loan at Hull at the end of his career, actually, so he has got Hull links.
All will pan out perfectly together. Mm. I see Mike Baker has actually lined his particular article with calls for Tony Pulis to be sacked are everywhere. Jack, are you one of those leading people who are calling for Tony Pulis to be sacked?
Maybe not the leader, but I'm definitely in there,
100%. Comments made about his latest press conference. Were you at the press conference this morning, Rob?
No, I was at the press conference last week.
Ah, what Jack was saying. Typically Pulis, he's throwing the strikers under the bus again. I think that was a fairly accurate quote, wasn't it, Emily, in terms of the three? And they're not even on the pitch. What is the fans feeling?
We've got... I'm not sure what page it is in the fanzine.
One in front of you. You can find out, have you?
But we had an alternative cover that we could have used this week, and it's between Pulis and Britt Assombalonga, where he says, if I made a mistake, I'll hold my hand up to Pulis, and then Pulis is saying it's Britt's fault.
The current cover, by the way, Richard, in case you're interested, is Steve Gibson looking, scrutinising a piece of paper with the line, is this the real league table? And the query, have we had a points deduction? No.
No.
Bolton Wanderers have had a points deduction, or will be getting a points deduction, whichever sort of series they're actually in. So, I think, Richard, you've kind of inspired us. Do you feel he's been inspired, Richard, from the point of view in terms of...
We're talking... Take the longer view.
I regard myself an inspirational figure.
Yes, that's true.
And actually, we've got a link between Richard and inspiration. Is an inspirational interview in this fanzine, which is with Mackenzie Thorpe. Richard and Withy saw that this week that Mackenzie was in Middlesbrough to give a sculpture of a little boy and a girl waiting for my dad coming. I interviewed him after that. After that sort of ceremony, there was loads of people there. He was very emotional about it all.
Mackenzie Thorpe is 62. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Where have the years gone? I mean, that's like saying Richard Piers Raymond is over 45. It's like,
yeah, it can't be true.
It
can't be.
Surely not.
I can tell you where the pension office is if you want to know.
Right, so Peter Branton and his Boris Scarfe, etc. Of course, we had Mike McGrover and the Infant Hercules Choir serenading Mackenzie Thorpe and the sculpture, of course, with the anthem there. So
yes, they came over the gondola of the Transporter Bridge singing their theme tune, their theme song, Infant Hercules, as if they were the dads coming home from work. For Mackenzie by the sculpture, and he was really, really moved by it all. And he basically wanted to sort of leave a message to people that he left school without any qualifications whatsoever, and his mum and dad packed him up with some sandwiches and whatever money they could afford when he went on the night bus to having got into a college in London. And he's just saying that to always strive for your dreams and don't let things get in the way, really, and always remember where you're from, as you do, Richard. Always remember your roots.
Yeah, true enough.
Mackenzie Thorpe revealed that he stood in the very spot where he first stood and drew the transporter bridge as a 10-year-old boy. How old were you when you started drawing and sort of developing this? Was it when you were just in sight of Ayresome Park reading those great collection of comic magazines, Richard?
I was 4 years old. I was 4 years old when I started.
Take that, Mackenzie Thorpe. You know, 6 years younger.
I can remember now sitting by the fire in my mum's house, first in Ingram Road. And my grandparents bought Tavistock, the house in Tavistock Street, because it was just outside Ayresome Park. So, you know, I've always drawn. It's not just, what I do is not just pure illustration. It's creating a narrative. It's telling a story. Mm. So it's a different discipline. And it's one that really I learned from reading American comics as a small boy. While I could hear the band marching up and down the Ayresome Park pitch and the light from the floodlights and the echo of the footsteps on the cobblestones outside.
Probably even...
And then Grandad coming in, the door slamming, winter chill and tobacco smoke wreathed around him, and he'd be saying, "That's the last time I'm ever going there." Not for the rubbish. So these aren't new feelings of people.
No.
Even Stanistan, who says, "I feel that my football club is broken. I feel that there is a real disconnect between the fans and the team." Might need you to have to listen back to the podcast, listen to the words of Richard Piers Raymond, and things will be there. Richard, let's give a plug to the exhibition in Scarborough that's well worth accessing from your good self again. It runs from now until when?
At least for another month. It's mm-hmm. at the Electric Angel Gallery on Museum Terrace, on the way down to the Spa, near the Rotunda in Scarborough. It's a small exhibition, but it's original comic book artwork, Rotunda edition, Captain America, Doctor Who. And I'd be very pleased if anyone had a look and said something nice in the visitor's book.
Oh, brilliant.
I think we should be there.
Definitely got to go.
Yeah,
with Scarborough.
It's a seaside trip. You know,
yeah.
That's very, I mean, last year, of course, didn't Tony Pulis actually have the he cycles to Redcar, really? So just a bit more down the coast. You know, on that basis. Great stuff. Richard, it's been awesome. What was your prediction? What would be your prediction be for Borough against Hull City?
I don't like predicting, because I always feel, you know, you kind of put yourself on the spot. I've got a good feeling. I see a home win. I'll give 2-0.
There you are.
Yeah, well done. Yeah.
Exactly. Sorted. Richard, it's been awesome. We will speak again very soon, I've no
doubt. I hope so, my friend.
I think,
good luck to you all.
Round of applause for Richard Peter Raymond, please.
Hey, celebrate and rejoice. It's Rob Nichols and friends on Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast. Not to be confused with Fly Me to the Moon, the song. Or the fragrance for men.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialize in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
100. Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium.
Hang on.
And one tablespoon. Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York, and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
Hi, this is Bernie Slaven and you're listening to Rob Nichols on Fly Me to the Moon.
Thank you, Bernie.
I knew we'd get there in the end. Oh dear Lord, it's just the excitement of Bernie Slaven and Richard Piers Raymond on the whole thing. We were just talking about the Chinese connection because Rob, of course, you have been to Hong Kong. Your brother's over in Hong Kong.
That's right.
Emily's been to Hong Kong three times?
Twice.
Exactly. And Jack's going to be teaching in China. Pain.
And my nephew has played for Hong Kong football under 14, something like that.
Yeah. It's just a small world, clearly. Steve Gibson's daughter, Victoria, has a feature in the great Steel and Iron system of Fly Me to the Moon. And you've had a chat with her, and great. So talk to us about Victoria Gibson.
Yeah, she's involved in theatre and theatre production, and she's brought together, well, she's bringing together a project with all sorts of people like Alistair Griffin, Catelyn Kane, the playwright Ishi Din, and Paul Smith, singer of Maximo Park, these people included. She's sort of distilling it into some sort of big musical production about Teesside. She did some sort of a sort of interim piece for an invited audience recently. I noticed that had happened. Mm. So I asked her what's it all about. So she's written a piece about how she sees things going and how she's proud of where she's from, and she wanted to do something positive about the area.
The water, the heritage, the possibilities. And as, again, Richard was alluding to this, the coverage in the national press and media always been negative towards us. Jack, you're coming to the end of your studies at the University of Staffordshire. In Staffordshire, was it a case of when they realised you're from Middlesbrough, scorn was poured upon your good self? And people saying, are you a Geordie? And other such scurrilous sort of lines.
No, not necessarily. I mean, a lot of people down there, they don't have a clue about the North anyway. Mm.
Do you think it's quite? I always think that Stoke is. There's quite a lot of comparisons between Stoke and Teesside, really.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I mean, I've had several conversations with people who say it's a much worse version of Middlesbrough.
Really. I always think going there actually it reminds me of Middlesbrough and Stockton several years back, as if it seems to be. There seems to the last time I went this season seemed to be. Quite a lot of cranes up, a lot of development going on, but it just always seems like a few years behind. It makes me feel better.
Very much so.
All positive materials. And Stoke City are below Middlesbrough, and they're in the league.
Yeah.
So there we are.
Another bonus.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, you know, we're working, Rob. I think he's seeing the light now, Jack.
Yeah.
We're gradually seeing the light. On the Emily, you're having a little perusal through the Hull City issue 525 Fly Me to the Moon programme. Anything that's caught your eye?
Right now I'm just reading through the article about racism. Mm.
Which is a very important and vital sort of aspect. So let's to that, we need to talk about the R word, Matt Smith, not the 11th Doctor, in case people were wondering.
No, we don't think it is.
No, that's very true. But are we going back to those days? I do remember, sadly, even at Essen Park back in the day, where, yes, you'd have the monkey chants and various other things would be talked about. I just seem to recall, from a different angle entirely, Charlie George got an awful lot of stick one day for when he actually decided to have a perm. Played for Derby at the time.
Yeah.
Which could have been regarded as that.
I think Matt's starting point is we saw what happened England-Montenegro and the calls for stringent action, and then afterwards, as Matt's pointed out, and as many people have said, well, it's not just a problem in former Eastern Europe. Mm. It's a problem here, and we've heard, I think even this week, there were incidents, weren't there, from Chelsea, from how much are there? Is it down to individual fans, or how much has there been a problem in society at the moment? And Matt's certainly linking it to things like Brexit. Has that encouraged xenophobia and racism? I don't know what these guys think.
Let's turn to Emily. You've had a look at the article. You've read through that. What are your thoughts on this topic?
I just don't think racism's necessary at all, obviously. But I really don't think it has any relevance to football or anything. I don't think it should have an impact or make a difference where you're from.
Yeah. Absolutely right. And as we are currently recording this, and it's broadcasting live, obviously, the James Cook University Hospital on Global Youth Service Day, maybe we need to acknowledge that. Jack, what are your own thoughts? I mean, is this something where, you know, human beings, the tribalism of football, the sport that comes through on that basis?
I think, from my point of view, football's taken a bit of a step back in that culture of, you know, racism. Violence is starting to come back. Mm. It's a lot underground now, but, it's, you know, you still see a lot of it. I mean, there's no place for it in football at all. It really isn't.
You were at Bolton Wanderers at the University Ground, I'd say.
University of Bolton Stadium.
The University of Bolton Stadium.
Oh, that's right, it is. Yeah.
Was there a sense there of an underlying sort of tension? I mean, because obviously you've got both clubs battling through in all sorts of ways.
No, I mean, I didn't see anything. I don't know if you were there on Tuesday, Rob. It was a very flat atmosphere from both sides. I mean, with the situation Bolton are in, equally the situation we found us, it's not a situation we've experienced very often, losing six on the bounce. So
asking Rob if he was there is a bit like asking is the Pope for Catholic. You know, one match in 30, 40 years?
I missed the match to go to Hong Kong for my brother's wedding in 1999.
Yeah, exactly. So 21st century, 100% record. So, yeah. But would you agree with Jack's answer?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I think the crowd giving us something like 12,000 or something.
So it was given us 12,000, but there was not 12,000.
Yeah, there was the smallest.
You'll stand by that, won't you?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was the smallest crowd I've ever seen in a championship match. Right. It happens in football. It happens at gigs and everything that you give the crowd size for the tickets that are sold. Right. Obviously, loads of season ticket holders weren't there, and I can imagine a lot of people from Bolton don't want to give their money to their present owner.
Well, you just go things like wages and such that.
Well, that's right. Yeah, so you're playing against a club that where the players went on strike not because they hadn't been paid themselves, which they hadn't, but because the ordinary staff hadn't been paid. It really puts it all in perspective.
We'll wrap up with Matt Smith's final paragraph. There are forces at play that seek to divide our community. These forces are self-serving. They do not act in our best interests. We must not let them prevail. Football worked hard to banish the ugliness of the 70s and 80s. Clearly, there is still work to be done. For a moment, I thought he was talking about UKIP there, but actually, it's very true. You know, lots of things on that side of things. Because, as you rightly said, Rob, there are lots of issues in the political scene which kind of make a play of this notion of let's make a difference, the enemy, and let's demonise and go from that.
Yeah, we've got some sort of splits in our society in the last couple of years, and we're arguing with ourselves and.
Shall we go homegrown strikers then? I mean, you know, it's going to be a tough one here because we only actually have two scripts amongst the entire four of us to actually get packages from that point of view.
But yes.
Shall we? If Emily launches with the first two lines of page 25's Jimmy Flynn epic, then maybe I can follow up, and then maybe you can actually follow through from that basis. And Jack, your line is quite simply, when will the next one come along? Okay?
No,
that's when will the next one come along? This is going to be interesting. Emily, you'll kick us off, and then hopefully, a bit like Foggan and Hickton back in the day, you'd have like a sort of double sort of hand, or maybe even, you know, moving in slightly early, maybe a case of, you know, Terry Cochran crossing for David Mills. You know, that sort of
thing. David Mills is homegrown, and he's mentioned.
Of course, exactly. So there we are. So, Emily, would you like to launch homegrown strikers?
Where have Borough's homegrown strikers gone?
When will the next one come along? What has happened to the production line that provided an endless line of goal scorers, fine centre forwards gifted at hitting the net? A safe, surefire bet. Guaranteed goals to get. Strikers who would bring the crowd to its feet and who any defence could beat.
Goals flying in left, centre and right, a formidable force of goal-scoring might. Legendary occupants of Borough's number 9 position, striking fear and panic into the opposition for a century and more, an unbroken chain. A prolific hitmen emerged again and again, all possessing deadly accurate, unerring aim, shooting their way to football fame.
Each steeped in goal-scoring technique, each with his own striking style unique. Alan Peacock magnificent at playing the ball in the air, phenomenal heading ability beyond compare. Brian Clough, the Grove Hill goal grabber, shooting to the top of the goal-scoring ladder. His scoring rate peerlessly, phenomenally prolific. His striking power terrifyingly goal-laden, terrific.
Adorned in a soccer cloak of talent and flair, thundering in goals from here, there, everywhere, launcher of long-range goal bound rockets, potent picker of centre-half's pockets, dynamic David Hodgson tirelessly covering miles of ground, giving defenders the run-around, Mickey Fenton cutting in and scoring on the angle, triple centurion George Campbell would routinely defences mangle.
George Elliott, early 1900s, prodigious hitman, amassed 200 goals plus in his career span. David Mills, winged on his heels, electric quick, smooth and slick at turning a goal-scoring trick. Each a product of Borough's centre-forward conveyor belt, who in front of goal made their presence felt. Where have Borough's homegrown strikers gone? Consigned to history, everyone.
When will the next one come along?
I think that was... I think a round of applause for us. Yay! Who was it who said that homegrown poetry and homegrown strikers is a dying art, you know, performance poetry, etc.? Jack, anything that's caught your eye from Fly Me to the Moon's issue 595 that you'd like to
The racism article I definitely was having a look at, but I think all around, what we've mentioned was...
Another gem.
Yeah.
£1.50, that's all you need. Go out there. It's obviously the podcast is completely free and will remain completely free from that point of view, but well worth accessing. How can people actually get a hold of physical copies of Fly Me to the Moon, Rob Nichols?
Come and find us at the match, I think. Somebody did subscribe for the last two matches, but it's quite late to be doing that. Yeah, come and find us selling around the match. I think we're also on sale at Kadim's shop, Borough Bookworm, which is always worth a look in because it's got tremendous array of back issues and programmes and all the sort of Borough books from over the years as well.
Richard Piers Raymond gave us, of course, the 2-0 prediction. Emily, as a Manchester United, sorry, choking on those words as a supporter, would you like to give us your prediction for Middlesbrough versus Hull tomorrow?
I'm usually wrong when I try and predict it, so I'm going to... I think I'll leave it to see what happens.
Jack Cochran.
Well, I mean, I tried my best for the Villa game a few weeks ago.
You got the right number of goals, though.
I did get the right number of goals.
It was just the wrong order. So.
But with the way we're playing at the moment, I'm going to go 2-1 Hull. I think we'll take the lead. Whoa. Concede, same as Brentford, same as Preston.
The next generation sadly needs a bit more optimism from that point of view.
No. Well, I mean, obviously, Aston Villa took us apart, and Swansea did as well. I was staying in Swansea afterwards, and people said, I don't know whether they were just trying to be nice, but that was their best performance of the season. At home, all the games have been pretty tight, haven't they?
Pretty good against Manchester City, Swansea.
Well, they were, that's right. Swansea are on a really good run, yeah. And they're producing a lot of good young players, or either they're producing themselves or they bought them in cheaply in the transfer market. It's probably the direction that most fans would like us to go down, I would imagine.
Let's not make a prediction, Rob. Let's step away. We'll leave it.
We're going to beat Hull.
There you have it. And as we have four in the studio to wrap up with those final seven words, obviously Jack is well familiar with respect to this. Yeah. Singing them when he goes over to China later on in the year, and I'm sure Emily will be up and sorted out for this. Young Musician of the Year in 2011, you know.
Oh, wow.
Woodwind.
Congratulations.
So it's a whole range of things from that point of view. After three, 1, 2, 3.
Come on, Borough.
Come on, Borough.
Up the Borough.
We can do better than that, I think. You know, come on, Emily. I want more oomph about the whole thing, okay? 1, 2, 3.
Come on, Borough. Up the Borough.
Hey, celebrate and rejoice. It's Rob Nichols and friends on Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast. Not to be confused with Fly Me to the Moon, the song, or the fragrance for men.